The Oregon Climate Change Research Institute is a network of research scientists who are monitoring what's called the blob, as well as other aspects of climate change, and they're here today to tell us what they've learned so far. Joining us is Institute Director Phil Moat, Associate Director Kathy Dello, along with NOAA University of Washington researcher Nick Bond, who is known as the father of the blob. Good morning, Phil, Kathy, and Nick.
Good morning.
Hey there.
Well, the father of the blob, which is very interesting. It sounds like a movie from the 50s, doesn't it? Tell us a little bit, Nick, about the blob, since you're its dad.
Well, yeah, I guess I should be proud of that, right?
Yes.
We really started noticing the temperatures in the Northeast Pacific warm up in early 2014. There were some unusual weather patterns that winter, and the ocean basically didn't cool off as much as it usually does that winter, leaving much warmer than normal temperatures behind. And it's kind of evolved over the year and a half, but it's still much warmer than normal. And so I just started calling it the blob, just a little bit for fun and a little bit to call a kind of a complicated situation, give it a simple name. And boy, that name caught on.
Are you the Steve McQueen of the blob?
Well, no, I don't think so.
No, you don't think so.
But,
well, also with us, Phil Moat, you are the director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute. Tell us a little bit about how the institute was founded and just in general what some of the work is that you folks do there.
Yeah, thanks. The state legislature created the institute during its 2007 session, and it really kind of got up and running in 2009. When Kathy and I arrived, and the institute aims to serve citizens and businesses and governments in Oregon and beyond. We host two regional centers for different federal agencies: the NOAA Climate Impacts Research Consortium, which is a partnership with University of Oregon, University of Washington, and University of Idaho, and also the Northwest Climate Science Center for the Department of the Interior. Again, partnerships with University of Washington and University of Idaho. Both of these do research and try to support decision makers in water utilities, coastal managers, forest managers with climate information.
Kathy, how are you involved in this process?
Well, I spend a lot of my time running the state climate office, and most of the states in the U.S. have one of these. And what we do is we look at climate data mostly from the past and the present, but also the future, and think about how what we're seeing fits into our historical context. If these temperatures, if we've seen these warm temperatures before, if this drought's abnormal, and what do we know about the next few months?
I was going to ask Nick about the blob. Theories that we have, do we have theories about why it exists? Do we know?
Yeah, we've done some work in which the processes that were responsible for it, and it is certainly due to the kind of unusual weather patterns that have prevailed over the Northeast Pacific and the Pacific Northwest the last couple of years. And so, in a nutshell, especially the a ridge of higher than normal pressure during the winter of 2013-14 meant weaker winds, less heat drawn out of the ocean by the atmosphere, and the water is just becoming a lot warmer than normal. And so we have a pretty good understanding of how the atmosphere caused the blob in the first place. What is a little less well understood is why the atmosphere got in these weird weather patterns in the first place. But even there's some hints.
We have a caller on the line from Eugene. Steve, go ahead.
Howdy. For the last several decades, we've been talking about El Niño, La Niña. Is this affecting the blob in it any way whatsoever? And also, for the past decade or so, we've been talking about the dead zone off of Newport, the ocean. Is this blob exacerbating that dead zone, or is it creating a dead zone of its own somewhere off away from what we have now?
Yeah, well, those are two very insightful questions. And first of all, the first question about whether the blob is kind of related to El Niño or La Niña, the ENSO cycle, it turns out that the unusual weather patterns that first really got it going are can be linked to things that were going on in the far western tropical Pacific. So in a mechanism similar to how El Niño affects the weather and oceanography in our neck of the woods, but with the roots further west in the tropical Pacific. And so while it's not El Niño, it's kind of like it. And just the climate community in just the last few years has realized that there's this other sort of mode of variability. Your second question had to do with the kind of the dead zone, and in particular the low oxygen concentrations that we've been seeing at times, especially off the Oregon coast in the summertime. And it's difficult to give a definitive answer there, but to an extent, those waters at depth are get low in oxygen when there is a cap of warmer water on top of the in the upper part of the ocean that keeps it from getting ventilated as much. But for the most part, we see those dead zones when there are wind patterns that bring that water that's low in oxygen up into the coastal waters. And so it's kind of a little bit of yes and a little bit kind of more having to do with weather patterns. And so I'm not sure if that second answer is too satisfactory, but that's kind of the state of the knowledge.
We're speaking today with some scientists from the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute, as well as NOAA and the University of Washington. We're talking about an area of the Pacific that is known as the blob. It has temperatures that are warmer than the surrounding water and creating concerns about that for fisheries and climate change. And we'll continue to take your questions. You can reach us here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email during the live broadcast. jx@jeffnet.org. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange this morning. We're talking about an area over the Pacific that is known as the blob. It's large in scale, and its temperatures are a few degrees above average compared to the surrounding water. We're talking about the implications for us and what it means. We're taking your calls here on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760. Let's go to John in Eugene. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hi. This is a little off topic, but you are the kind of person who should or maybe would have some information. So ice on and ice off are kind of a good climate measure, or they're used a lot for ice on, ice off on lakes. And I've noticed that three of the last 4 years, Waldo Lake never froze over, and every other year that I've seen it for the last 35, it's frozen over. So what I'm wondering is there a place to get that data, ice on, ice off for Oregon lakes? And what does it mean for our climate?
Phil or Kathy?
Well, I don't know if there's actual records for Waldo Lake for ice on, ice off, but I'm not surprised that it didn't freeze over, especially this year. It was our warmest winter on record in western Oregon, and we're talking about 8 or 9 degrees above normal, not just a few. So we struggled to build snowpack. We didn't have ice. Winter pretty much completely forgot about us.
Let me ask what impact, I mentioned this briefly before, this is having on marine life, the migration of fish and animals in the area. Could you speak to that?
I'll take a crack at that one. And certainly we're seeing impacts on the marine ecosystem from the base of the food web up to the kind of the higher trophic levels. And in particular, what is probably most important is, again, at the base of the food web, whether it's the subtropical species versus the species, subarctic species that are more adapted to cool water. And because the water is warmer than normal, it's more of those subtropical species that are not as nutritious for many seabirds, juvenile salmon, marine mammals, and so forth. And so we're seeing a real shift in community structure. We're not sure how that is all going to be playing out, but we know it's going to have some, there's going to be some winners and losers.
Join us with a question, 800-838-3760. We have Grumpy John on the line from Grants Pass. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Hey, listen, just because the Fukushima reactor is continuing to spill radiation into the ocean, nobody would say that directly has anything to do with the blob. However, if you have been watching the GOES West satellite picture of the North Pacific, you will have been seeing a very anomalous pressure ridge over the west coast. You have the Pineapple Express heading toward Oregon and then just turning left or right like a fence was put up there. There are people who know a lot more about this than I do who suggest that the reason for that pressure ridge is it has been created by HARP, the HARP assembly, and that it is in order to try and keep that radiation from reaching us. So it's not the radiation, it's HARP building a pressure wall to try and keep the radiation away. That sounds a little far out, but when you've watched the otherwise normal pattern just hit a wall and turn left or right, it tends to give credence to it, and I would be interested in your speculation on that.
Anyone would care to comment on that? Do we have any HARP experts here?
This is Phil. I'll make a first stab at it, and then Nick can chime in, or Kathy. So HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, which is ionospheric research, mainly up in the Arctic. And it's really not, I know there's sort of conspiracy theories floating around that it's somehow weather modification, but that's simply not true. There's just no way for those frequencies in those locations to have a large-scale weather effect. And Nick referred to this atmospheric ridge that's been a fairly common feature over the last 18 to 24 months off the West Coast. And that's part of a larger pattern. And he referred earlier to other possible causes for that in turn. So I'll let him chime in on that.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, there seems to be at least part of the cause for it is unusual conditions in the far western tropical Pacific in the vicinity of New Guinea, at least a year ago or so, where much warmer than normal water there and large persistent clusters of thunderstorms set up this kind of large-scale standing wave pattern, something kind of like if you threw a big boulder in a mountain stream and the series of waves that are downstream from it. And so a lot of it, too, is just the atmosphere is able to produce these anomalous conditions kind of on its own. It's such a complex, chaotic sort of system that these sort of things happen. So I'm in complete agreement with Phil that it can't really be related to some of the auroral research projects that are going on at high latitudes, nor is the warm waters themselves directly related to the radiation releases from Fukushima. And that's a disaster of its own type, but it's not responsible for the blob.
Nick, have there been previous blobs, or is this the first one we've ever discovered?
There have been previous ones. This is the strongest one. Actually, one of the stronger ones is way back in 1958. There was a very similarly shaped mass of much warmer than normal water out there. And so we've seen this before, but it is rather unusual and extreme in nature. And so Some of us are actually think it's a good opportunity to learn how the system works. And so it's, you know, it's not all bad.
A question perhaps for Nick or Kathy about this summer in Oregon. Here in southern Oregon, around the Medford area, we just had the warmest June on record since they started keeping records back, I think, in 1911. Did the blob contribute to this? I know it's a chicken and egg question with high pressure over the area helping to warm things up, but was it part of that equation in the warmer than average temperatures here?
Kathy, I'll let you, you know, take a stab at that one.
It certainly was part of the equation, and the June temperature record in Medford was destroyed. I mean, normally we break these records by about a few tenths of a degree or a degree, and it was almost 4 degrees in Medford, and that was the case around much of southern Oregon and western Oregon and actually eastern Oregon as well. But if we keep going back through the seasons, spring was warm in southern Oregon. I would say it was in the top five. It was the warmest winter on record. And then last summer was the warmest on record. So it coincides with that area of warm temperatures off our coast, that ridge. And it's really led us into a pretty severe drought.
Yeah, and I would like to add that the prevailing winds are from the west off the ocean. And once you get that water quite a bit warmer than normal, it does have a impact on low-level temperatures, you know, within a few hundred miles at least of the coast. But again, we keep talking about this ridge. The primary cause of our warm and dry weather is that weather pattern. And so I would say the ocean has been important, but kind of secondary to just that the dumb ridge of high pressure that just keeps baking us.
Yeah. Jeannie is on the line from Medford. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi. I'm wondering, is there any credence to what's been called the Wallinda effect? The famous tightrope family, the Wallindas, say as a butterfly flaps his wings in Ecuador and so on, and the vibrations from that, et cetera. I don't know. I've just heard the Wallinda effect.
Question on that.
Phil, I'll jump in. I haven't heard it called the Wallinda effect, but you refer to the butterfly effect. There was an atmospheric scientist at MIT in the 50s and 60s. Well, his career went longer than that, but who advanced the concept that the atmosphere is chaotic, and he used the word chaos in a very specific manner, not disorganized, but what he called deterministic non-periodic behavior. And he was able to show mathematically chaotic behavior. So an example of chaos is if you have a board with a whole bunch of pins driven into it and you start releasing balls at the top, you know, they'll bounce down in seemingly random fashion. And the idea is if you start the ball, you know, 1 millimeter to the left, it will follow a somewhat different trajectory. But if you release it in exactly the same place every time, it should follow the same trajectory if the ball has exactly the same mass. And the analogy to the atmosphere is that it does follow equations, and if you could start it in exactly the same configuration and let the winds blow again, it would follow the same sequence. But a slight disturbance, hence the butterfly flapping its wings, could make it take a different path. And that's why our field is so challenging, because when we look at what actually happened and the interactions between the ocean and the atmosphere, it doesn't always follow the same path that it might have given the same you know, ocean temperatures and other things. So sometimes it just does something very surprising, like generate this big ridge, which sits around for a while and has other consequences. And other times it behaves in a somewhat more predictable fashion. The most predictable behavior is what results from El Nino when we're looking over timescales of several months. If there's a patch of warm water in a specific place in the equatorial Pacific, as there is this year, we can look at past events and be pretty confident what's going to unfold.
I have a bit of a hypothetical. If you have this a warm water anomaly out there already. And then if you move into an El Nino year, and I heard some talk about the Pacific Decadal Oscillation and how it flips back and forth between cool and warm. And if you add all these things up, do you get a perfect storm of problems with this kind of effect?
Yeah, that's a good question. And a bunch of us are kind of trying to puzzle that one out. Because, like Phil mentioned, there is an El Nino in place right now, and we're expecting that to have some impacts on our weather this winter. It looks like what it will tend to do is make the coastal zone keep it rather warm, but it may actually cool off the kind of Gulf of Alaska, at least the southern part of it. And we really don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's something we're definitely watching because of the potential for things to, you know, really get warm.
And there have been reports of sharks and tuna that have been caught in the Gulf of Alaska. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's been highly unusual sightings I've seen last summer and starting to occur this summer. A really odd-looking fish, the sunfish, that is usually in subtropical waters. Those have been seen well north of their usual range. And, yeah, like you say, sharks and tuna being closer to the coast than usual. The tuna prefer warmer water, and they're able to get in kind of closer to the coast than usually. And to a certain extent, that's a good thing. At least off the Washington coast, there's a pretty large fishery, both recreational and commercial, for that. And if they're closer, that's all the better.
We are speaking this morning about the blob. It's an area of ocean out in the Pacific that is fairly large in size, and it's the water temperature is warmer than average for this time of year. If you'd like to ask a question, you can join the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Does this particular anomaly, I know like with El Nino, it often extends to the western coast of South America as well. Does this go down into that area, or is it pretty much just the northern hemisphere?
I'll go ahead with that one. It, what I've been calling the blob actually right now has two main centers of action. There's one off the Pacific Northwest coast, but it's much warmer water than normal in Southern California and off of Baja California. And that seems to be mostly unrelated to the El Nino and has to do down there with unusual winds from the south that have prevented as much upwelling as usual of cooler waters from depth. And so they're having all sorts of impacts from that. You may have heard about the emaciated sea lions down in Southern California, and red tuna crabs kind of washing up on the beaches and that sort of thing. And so there's also warm water, at least in the off the southern part of North America, and along with the El Nino, which is more in the tropics.
We have Harry on the line from Eugene. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoy your show. You have an interesting guest and topic here today. My question is this. Does the volcanic activity, does it regulate? Does it increase or decrease? Or does it have anything to do with this issue we're talking about today? Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. Volcanic activity.
That's a great question. And there's a lot of interest in that. It turns out that the hydrothermal vents and volcanic activity on the seafloor, they're an important source of trace minerals for the ocean. And just some recent work has shown that they're an important supply of iron that is necessary for the whole kind of plankton growth and so forth. But it turns out that in this case, most of the warming of the ocean has been just in the top 100 meters or so. And so we don't see warm waters relative to normal at depth. It's all at the surface and having to do with the kind of air-sea interactions. And so while the heat out of those volcanoes locally can be a big deal, it doesn't seem to be responsible for the blob itself.
I'm wondering about salmon runs because they like the colder water and the nutrients, I guess, with that. And, of course, with salmon, you're talking about a multi-year problem if something like this appears this year. Do we have any projections on how the salmon runs in Washington or Oregon are going to be affected in the next year or two?
Yeah, it's probably it's not great news for them. And the returning adults this year, it looks like there are good returns, especially in the Columbia River system. But that was because the conditions for the juveniles when they first went to sea either a few years ago for the Chinook or last year for the Coho were mostly favorable. And right now, it looks like it's mostly unfavorable, and so those returns are liable to be poorer than normal in the next few years.
We're talking this morning about the blob out over the Pacific Ocean, a warmer-than-average area of the Pacific, and how it's influencing climate change and other factors. And we're going to take a short break and come back and speak more with representatives of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute and NOAA, University of Washington. Stick with us. Welcome back. We're speaking this morning with some scientists who are studying a condition called the blob. It's an area, a large area out in the Pacific that is warmer than average in its temperatures by a few degrees than the surrounding water. And it's causing some changes and impacts to fisheries and animal migration, and even having an impact in part on the extremely warm weather we've had in parts of the Northwest, including in Southern Oregon and Northern California this year. Joining us are Institute Director of the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute, Phil Mote, Associate Director Kathy Dello, and NOAA University of Washington researcher Nick Bond, who is sometimes described as the father of the blob, having discovered this and written about it. If you have a question and would like to join our conversation this morning, the Jefferson Exchange is at 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. This persistent ridge of high pressure we've had the past couple of years, I take it that in the winter when the Aleutian Low starts to dominate and you start getting those Pacific storms, will this so-called blob, will it dissipate fairly quickly if we get those storms coming back this next winter? Kathy, we haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, we didn't have much of a winter last year and the blob stuck around, so I don't necessarily know that that's the case, and Nick knows far more about ocean conditions than I do, but this El Nino forecast is pretty worrisome. Certainly we're in an El Nino now. We expect it to continue through the winter. And in your area, it's a little bit transitional. It doesn't necessarily mean warmer and drier winters, but for much of the Pacific Northwest, it does. So we're looking at this dry, hot summer, and we're looking toward our winter and a little bit worried that we won't see any relief. But I don't know that any sort of Aleutian Low activity would make the blob dissipate, and Nick can take that.
Yeah, and it's a little different. Right along the coast, if anything, it would probably exacerbate the warm conditions, but further offshore with a deeper Aleutian Low, more storms, higher winds. You want to cool off soup, you blow on it. That may be working out hundreds of miles offshore, but the kind of the wind patterns that we get tend to cause warm water right along the coast. And so right now, my expectation would be some cooling to the west, but maybe even some warming right along the coast. With the winter we have coming up ahead.
Actually warming that area up. In southern Oregon, you get south of the Umpqua Divide, we get about half the precipitation that folks do to the north up through the Willamette Valley. When you get into a drought situation, I mean, we're dry all the time down here. Does this climate change in general, and the blob in particular, does that have a more severe impact on the environment and economic activity north of the divide, where you're used to a higher amount of precipitation? I've wondered about that. Kind of like if you're used to it being dry, then maybe you don't notice it as much.
Well, the reason that we're in this drought is pretty much because of the temperatures and the lack of snowpack this winter. So it's the second year of drought in southern Oregon. The year before, you probably remember, was pretty normal temperatures, but pretty dry.
Yes.
This year, it was a different story. It was very warm. Precip was near normal until about February, and then it's been very dry since. So I think the story is the same across the state. Anybody who's dependent on this snowpack for their water resources or stream flow is certainly struggling. So I don't think there's much of a difference between the north and the south in that respect. And places that are used to being dry out in eastern Oregon, like Ontario, are certainly struggling with drought for the fourth year. And they know dry weather, but they need that little boost for their reservoirs.
Wolfgang out in Sunny Valley, what he calls truly Sunny Valley, he wants to know if the blob out over the ocean has anything to do with the various garbage blobs, plastic bags and all the other stuff that seems to get, you know, thrown overboard or fall overboard. Could that have any impact on that?
Yeah, I've gotten that question before. Some people just contacting me. And it turns out the garbage patch out in the Northeast Pacific, it's not like you could see just plastic bags and milk cartons and that sort of thing. It's mostly microscopic pieces of plastic that the ocean really looks the same as it usually does. And so it's not like that all that junk is causing more solar heating of the ocean or something like that. It's its own environmental disaster for the sea life and so forth. But it doesn't seem to be a cause of the unusual warming.
How do you measure and track the blob?
Well, a lot of it is we have very good estimates of sea surface temperature based on satellite remote sensing. It turns out that it's not cloudy enough so that we can get a good look at the ocean through microwave and infrared wavelength sensors. Moreover, there's ships and buoys and other platforms that out there that are measuring the temperature. And so while we don't have as good an idea of what the subsurface temperatures and salinities for that matter are, we have a very good handle on the sea surface temperatures.
I was wondering, let's assume that either this coming winter or a winter after, hopefully, the blob goes away and temperatures return to average. Are we going to see more blobs in the future, in part because of a warming climate?
That's a good question. We are seeing warming in the oceans, and we are expecting that warming to accelerate with time. What has kind of been unusual about this last couple of years was this sort of quasi-circular patch of water, which is why I called it the blob. It was more kind of regional in nature, and it was due to the kind of unusual weather patterns. And so the overall warming of the climate and the oceans is kind of for a different reason than what we've seen over the last couple of years. And so we will continue to see variations in the climate system, including the ocean, higher temperatures, lower temperatures, and back and forth. And so there will continue to be these kinds of features, but who knows, maybe the blob itself just won't be prominent for quite a while.
Hmm. Warming temperatures sometimes benefit some people in southern Oregon. The vineyards have done very well with warmer temperatures. Is anybody benefiting from the blob, other than those shark and tuna that are chasing fish?
I don't know if Phil or Kathy, you want to comment there, and perhaps some of your The folks you've talked to in Oregon who are, you know, benefiting from this hot, dry weather. But
I'm sure there are people who are benefiting a little. If you love hot weather, then this is great for you. I personally don't like it myself. But most of the impacts we're hearing are negative. People are really struggling this summer. We heard a lot of recreation impacts over the winter. We're hearing some come in for the summer. It's mostly bad news.
Yeah, here in southern Oregon, it's, you know, we've had day after day of triple-digit temperatures. And even people I know that hate hot weather, or they've had enough, it seems like, and they're ready to move on and get something cooler. How do people obtain information on this? Do you folks have a website, and where can they go to learn more?
Learn more about the blob?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's... There are resources on the web. We have some stories about it on the Office of the Washington State Climatologist has some resources, and if you just Google that and kind of follow your nose, you can find some additional information on that. NOAA and other organizations have pretty easy to navigate websites kind of showing what conditions are like and so forth. In some cases, you have to be a little bit motivated to find what you need. Just speaking for the Office of the Washington State Climatologist, we invite emails and calls, and that's part of what we do is try to provide this kind of information to the interested public.
I had a question for Phil or Kathy. I wanted to switch gears just a little bit and talk about more broadly climate change. Some of that is, of course, related to the blob we've been talking about. But in your research, your current research at the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute, do you have anything that you'd like to share that about climate change in the last year or two? Anything that you've noticed in terms of measurements? Where do we stand in the state of Oregon today?
Well, about a year ago, a couple of us, along with a colleague from University of Idaho, John Abatsoglu, wrote a paper documenting weather trends over the last 120 years. And one of the most striking findings in that paper that John uncovered was he mapped the trends in the coldest day of the year across the Northwest. And that metric has actually changed a lot, especially east of the Cascades, not so much down in Jefferson area, but it was pretty striking. There were some stations where the coldest day of the year had warmed up by as much as 10 degrees Fahrenheit over the last 100 years. That's a pretty big change. We're also right now embarking on a new project to try to understand this interplay between the blob and the ridge and our drought in the three Pacific states, Washington, Oregon, and California, using volunteers who contribute time on their personal computers to run climate experiments. So that experiment is up and running, and the results are showing up on a website that updates every day with the new results.
I read that, and I was curious about what kind of data they were uploading and how you'd use the information. The first thing I thought of SETI when I saw that, where you have a lot of volunteers linking their computer information together. What are you going to use that data for?
Yeah, in fact, this project is sort of a cousin to SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which led to the creation of software called Boink, that allows users to access a variety of science experiments that they can run and be confident that there won't be a virus in there. And it's a nice setup because once you install it and turn it on, it'll just keep go fetching experiments as long as you let it. And so when one experiment finishes, it'll go get another one, and it doesn't interfere with your computational needs. And so what we're doing is providing ocean temperatures, both the actual observed temperatures over the last 18 months and also a couple of hypothetical other ocean temperature arrangements to see whether that influence goes both ways. So Nick referred earlier to how the blob was created by the ridge, which suppressed cloud formation and wind mixing. And, you know, so we're asking the question, if you take out the blob, can you still get a ridge like that, or does it affect the likelihood of the drought? So that's what's happening now. We're simulating the global atmosphere and especially looking closely at the Western U.S.
Do you work with other nonprofit or profit organizations to try to give some projections and information?
Yeah, we've had a lot of projects over the 6 years of our existence, federal and state agencies, some nonprofits, some tribes, cities. You know, there are some projects that go on for years, and we work very hard and, you know, employ a couple of people on a given project. And there are others that are, you know, where we can provide what somebody needs in just a couple of hours and help them maybe just accessing data or understanding an issue.
Have you, you were funded by the state of Oregon, and of course there's a lot of politics, and I don't want to go deep into that on climate change. Have you found a fairly favorable, excuse the pun, climate for your work here in Oregon?
Well, yeah. You know, climate. My bachelor's degree was in physics, and I found that nobody really understood what I was doing. But everybody understands weather and climate, and it touches all of our lives. And particularly when there's a really unusual event like this year with the drought. You know, Kathy, as the leader of our state climate office, has been doing double duty really for the last couple of years, providing information about the drought, putting numbers in context, working closely with folks in state agencies to figure out what's coming next. And so that kind of service connected to research is something that all three of us are very committed to in our respective states.
Today we've been speaking with the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute. They're a network of research scientists in the state who've been monitoring this area called the Blob, with above average temperatures out in the Pacific and what it means for us. We were also joined today by the University of Washington researcher Nick Bond. So to Phil, Kathy, and Nick, thank you for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Mel.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.